Susan, say hi.
Hello.
Well, she was walking away from the mic there. So she was just getting some laundry started because she's
life.
You know, being domestic and cute.
She certainly is domestic.
Susan's gonna shoot you through the mic.
You'll have to come back to Virginia to do that.
yuck. Hey, I hear that the spot for man/woman of the year is open now, so Susan could go back and snag that trophy.
What?
I don't know what he's referring to.
Yeah, me neither.
Being the man of the
year. Oh, he's talking about the
chiseled
photo,
trap
the
man of the year.
Photo.
Oh, yes.
I thought Pat was going for like a transvestite thing there, and I was like, should I get offended for Ian's sake?
No, he's
no.
Yeah.
If you've actually seen that picture of Coastal Fitness, you'll know that he's no transvestite.
Jesus, it's like what, a minute in, and we've already
so little to the imagination
gotten to this point.
Coastal Strength and Fitness Man of the Year. I wouldn't mess with him.
I wouldn't either.
Oh Jesus!
And yet we do every day.
Fine, it's because they know that they're far enough away where I can't hurt them.
You're closer to me now.
It's true.
This is true.
I don't feel like it because it was like, it's supposed to, in like a week, it's going to be like 10 degrees as the high. I'm like, oh, good.
You could say Ian's just a short flight away, Patrick. I heard you flew a plane today.
I did.
How was it?
It was awesome. It was awesome. It's one of those things that it was a little easier than I thought it was going to be, and it reminded me a lot of learning how to ride a motorcycle. It's just you have another axis involved. You go up, down. But
So Susan doesn't know about this, but Patrick actually flew a plane today.
Oh wow!
Yep,
that's a little scary.
Not really, actually.
Him drive a car, so if it's anything like that, I do have some slight fear.
So
Pat drives fast, but he drives competently.
Tell that to the deer he's really killed.
Well,
and the dog.
Worried about the dogs, yeah.
And the Scion TCs.
There's two of those. But anyway, so so it was great. It was fun. It was easy. I actually didn't have much anxiety at all. Throughout the entire process, the instructor guy, he let me sit in the left seat, which is where like the pilot would normally sit, and I pretty much did everything except landed.
How hard is it to land a plane?
So that's a really good question. Like, it is by far the hardest part of the entire experience, but that says more about how easy the experience is, in my opinion, than how hard it actually is. Like, if somebody's never done it before, I don't know if you could successfully do it without crashing. But if you start taking lessons, you will be landing a plane on your own within your third hour.
That's cool.
So like it is the most precise portion of it, but it really is not that difficult.
So does this mean flight school's back on the table?
Yeah, I was about to ask this. Is this a flight school thing?
Because I thought that we shelved that dream and now you're flying a plane.
I thought you were trying to be a lawyer is what I thought. Are you trying to be a lawyer / pilot now?
Oh, that's a TV show.
I know.
No, that would be a nice TV show, actually.
Like a traveling lawyer, but you use a plane. Every woman would be into that.
Single female lawyer. No, so it is definitely back on the table.
Nice.
It's a longer story that I'm not going to bring up on the podcast, but Brooke and I looked into it more, and we answered a lot of questions that we kind of had and a lot of shortcomings that we had. And so I've been looking at it and kind of looking at financials and stuff, and we'll see where it goes. Funnily enough, and not to derail us from the flying topic, but funnily enough, the biggest problem right now, if I decide to start taking lessons, is that I'm actually not able to progress because the FAA is closed.
Oh, interesting.
Oh, thanks, Donald.
Thanks, Democrats.
So even if I were to start today and throw down like a bazillion dollars, I wouldn't be able to get any of my FAA examinations or like check ride tests or anything like that. Like, I'd be stuck in limbo until it opens again.
It's fine. Just write a letter to
Congress.
Mr. Rogers.
Just to Nancy Pelosi, and just be like, I want to fly a plane, so you need to build the wall.
Yep. Yeah, there you go. There you
so
go.
That you can, so fly, can fly over the wall.
So I could fly over it.
Right. Yeah. So, no, it was a really great experience. I'm glad I did it. Like I said, if I'm just summarizing it, it was a lot easier than I thought. Also, something I told Brooke is that you don't really get an idea of how small a Cessna is until you're actually needing to jump into it.
I could believe that.
It was kind of the same feeling that I got the first time I sat on a motorcycle, not to continue these comparisons, but it's like you don't really fully comprehend how small and vulnerable you are on a motorcycle compared to a car until you actually get on one. Same kind of thing in a Cessna. Like, if I've flown commercially a bazillion times, but on planes of all different sizes, but you are like literally there. Like, it is just you and this sheet metal and the wind. Like, oof, that's about it.
Sheet metal makes it sound really rickety.
Well, I mean, like most training Cessnas are from like the 70s and 80s. So the answer to that question is yes.
That's a year you can trust. All right, guys, let's start this officially now. Everyone, welcome to the League of Mediocre Gentlemen. I'm your host / producer / recorder, Richard Martindale. And with me today, as always, is my co-hosts, Ian Shaw.
Hi!
Who sounds fantastic. And yay! Patrick Weaver, soon to be Captain Patrick Weaver. Of the skies.
I would just like to say,
Sky Captain Weaver,
I am not always the co-host because I was banned from the anime episode.
You just don't watch anime. How? What? I mean,
you weren't banned. You just weren't invited.
Yeah. I mean, watch one of the shows and you could pop in.
Oh, I'll pop in.
Oh dear.
Speaking of popping in.
Oh no.
We also have another co-host today.
A guest host.
Actually, this was not an oh no. Yes, a guest host today. This is Ian's lovely wife, Susan Shaw.
Hello.
Sorry, I almost went with your old last name, and I was like, that's not right. It's Susan Shaw now, so that's my mistake.
Have you filed that paperwork?
Oh, yes, I did.
Okay. Nice.
Yes.
Yep, she is legally my property.
That doesn't sound right. In complete confidence before we started recording that she used to be as skinny as a beanpole.
Oh. You guys didn't see, but she was pinching me.
She's already regretting this. And she's regretting letting Ian be on the show.
Well, she's never listened to any of them. So.
Oh, she hasn't heard the labia segment?
Oh, man.
Yeah, there was an entire segment on the labia, actually. That was a thing that happened.
It was educational.
I only
League of Mediocre Gentlemen, the place where relationships go to die.
I strongly suggested to Richard that he name that episode League of Mediocre, or the Mediocre Labia, and he did not do so.
I wanted to hide it so that way it didn't get censored from potentially our higher ups in the site.
impinge on our free speech.
Well, they can if it's for a private enterprise. Anyway, we're.
Can you get us back on track?
Let's
Richard?
Get back on track, guys. Because eventually we got to talk about baseball and let's talk about the arbitrations and Arenado and everyone. So
Bird Box.
Speaking of labias,
how?
Like a river in that movie.
Yeah, it's these arbitrations are a-flowing. I got nothing. That's the best I've got. Anyway, guys, arbitrations. A lot of record-breaking arbitrations going on right now, especially with Mookie Betts and potentially Arenado. What do you guys... you guys are the ones who really want to talk about this more than I think I do, but I want to hear your all's opinion of this. So, have at it!
Well, Patrick's the one that has a player that actually got some money, so why don't we let him lead off on that?
Yeah, talk to us about your Red Sox and Mookie Betts.
Yeah, so if the Red Sox can somehow figure out how to mimic their bullpen magic, they will win the World Series again next year.
So Mookie Betts in the bullpen, gotcha.
Yes, yeah, exactly. He will be – well, so – well, don't let me forget about this segue, but the idea is – I mean, you can't go wrong with our core at this point with Betts and Benintendi and JD Martinez. And so we're just set up well for the future. And I think that I honestly think that the Yankees know that, because with our current setup and how they're pushing for potentially Harper or Machado, I feel like they're not, even if they take that step, pull that trigger, they're not going to be close enough in order to realistically beat us. I mean, anybody can win on any given day. But yeah, so arbitration overall, I love arbitration. I think these guys deserve to be paid, and I hope that these numbers continue to go up in the future.
Ian, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was a good, I mean, I say a good move, but it was also not like not really their choice. But at the same time, the Red Sox seemed happy to do it. I believe that the move will probably help them as they, in the next year or two, probably try to talk extension with Mookie. You know, that's definitely a goal that they have. I don't know who Betts' representative is. Do you guys?
Nah,
I don't.
But
yeah, who cares? Sorry. It's the Red Sox. Everyone wants to play for the Red Sox.
But as far as
you gotta know that it's not true.
As far as a larger discussion, to me, like the larger discussion is that we've seen a lot of record-breaking raises, also on the heels of like arguably one of the coldest free agent periods in recent memory. Not necessarily because the big free agents have waited this long; they've waited this long in the past. That's not really the issue, but in the past, the whole. In the past, it seemed like the whole free agent freeze. We thought that the middle guys were the ones being squeezed, like David Freeze and whatnot. But really, the only teams that are seriously in on Machado and Harper right now seem to be the White Sox, the Phillies, and to a lesser extent, the Dodgers and Yankees, a much lesser extent. Which is, if you had asked any of us like 3 years ago, oh, the free agent season when Harper and Machado were available, like who do we think is going to make a play? And we probably thought a third of the league would make, you know, at least a concerted effort to sign them. And that just hasn't materialized, which I think is a huge shift away from it's been shifting away from free agent spending and freewheeling spending, but now even more so than before, like, it's pretty significant considering the talent. Do you guys agree or disagree?
Pat, you can go first.
I agree.
Oh my God. I agree. I think it's actually
more content. Such content. Much content.
I told you guys there was going to be a limit to how much depth we could go into this. But
you told me that I wasn't allowed to talk for an hour about arbitration. So I say that I agree.
I say I agree. I think it's interesting that we're moving away from the free agents, like the traditional way of, like, you know, letting a guy go and then signing some free agents instead. I kind of like this. It makes it that sense of loyalty that I know doesn't really exist, but it's fun to sort of imagine. It feels like that can kind of come back a little bit, or at least the narrative of it could come back, where it's like, oh yeah, like, you know, Betts could be a lifetime Red Sox now, and they'll give him the money, they'll give him his due, and I don't know. It's silly.
Do we have a buzzer? I need a buzzer. Because every time Richard shows that he's only been a baseball fan for like 10 years, I should buzz the buzzer, because the traditional thing is that you play for the same team for forever.
Yeah, I know, but like, you tell people that, and the folks on the internet are like, what are you talking about, man? Like, it's never loyalty. All they ever do is care about money, which I guess technically is probably true. Otherwise, David Price wouldn't be on the Red Sox, but
baby.
But I think that it's kind of cool to see this like arbitration strength coming back.
World Series champion David Price.
Yeah. Fuck you.
So do we? Oh, and real quick, because like as of recording, this could change by the time this goes to air. As of recording, Machado and Harper still have not signed, but it looks like the Phillies might be shifting their focus to Harper.
Because of Harper's wife.
I don't think that's true. So,
tell us the story, Patrick and Ian.
Not that. Go ahead, Pat.
So in the report, okay, it's what it said was that the Phillies management, I don't know who specifically, but the Phillies met with Bryce Harper and his wife in Las Vegas, either out to dinner or at their home or something. But it was in Vegas where Harper lives and is from. Okay. So, and that the Phillies were so enamored by not only Harper, but also by his wife, that their strategy may have shifted from trying hard to get Machado and instead to get Harper.
That sounds really insane.
I can't make this shit up. Like, that's what it said.
You also can't put a whole lot of stock in it because there's still in negotiations with Machado. So we don't know how much of this is true or a play to try to get Machado back to the table or something or what. So
his wife isn't even that hot.
I don't think it has to do with hot, Patrick.
You don't know that. Well, they're from Philadelphia, so I think it does.
I think the standards in Philadelphia is low enough that I don't think it has to do with hot.
I have seen a lot of episodes of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, so therefore I know everything about people from Philadelphia. Therefore,
Pat, you posted a picture of Harper and his wife. She is lovely. That is fantastic. Yeah.
I agree.
What is wrong with you? She isn't that hot. Get out of here, Patrick.
She is lovely. You are correct. She is lovely.
How dare you accuse me of having Kate Upton standards with every woman?
Anyway.
And then this one, you says, not that hot.
Jesus Christ. So anyway.
I mean, she's no Anna Kendrick.
God damn it.
So Manny Machado, back to baseball. Manny Machado has reportedly received an offer from the White Sox.
Yes. Yep.
They have an offer on the table.
All we know is it's 8 years right now. We don't know the price or anything.
It's 8 years, and they don't know for sure what the dollar amount is, but it's rumored to be somewhere in the $250 million, $260, I think, is the rumor, which is, of course, substantial, but less than they think they were looking for when the – when this whole thing started.
Yeah.
So the question now becomes, what do the Phillies do? And it sounds like also there was another report that says that the Phillies have moved off of the idea that they're going to get both players, which granted was always a long shot.
Yeah.
But it seems like now they have to pick, and I don't know what they're going to do. So
I know we said this on the Christmas episode, but Ian, if you had to choose between the two, now that some time has gone by, which one would you choose, and which one do you think fits the team better? They could be both,
My opinion has not changed. Really, to me, you can make arguments for either one. I respect Patrick's argument for Harper. I also understand the arguments for Machado. Realistically, to me, it does not matter. We need to get one. We have to. If we don't, it will be a massive failure. So really, to me, at this point, I do not prefer one over the other. I just want one of them.
Okay, so then which one, if you had to choose shortstop / third baseman or an outfielder, which one fits your team better?
Oh, my God.
Which area in the Phillies lineup is weaker?
There's a strong need at third base and outfield. We have a strong need at both those positions. So now
Michael Franco's just saying, am I a fucking joke to you?
Yeah, he fucking is, Richard.
Oh, that's so mean.
Okay, Michael Franco, he's a Phillies third baseman and he's garbage.
Third brother of the Francos.
So but if you're talking about
James Franco.
He is
But if you're also talking about other options, if we sign Machado, we could make a play for AJ Pollock to fill in the outfield position.
Oh, touche.
I mean, that's an option. But if we sign Harper, I don't know that there's a whole lot else out there at third base right now. So, if we sign Harper, I think we make a stronger play for Craig Kimbrell. I think if we sign Machado, we're going to go after AJ Pollock.
How is either of those things a good idea?
Did I say it was a... No, that's not what I didn't say it was a good idea. I said it's probably what they're going to do. You did not watch a lot of Phillies games. Our fucking bullpen was straight trash last year. Super bad.
So you obviously not didn't watch any of the playoffs because
yes, he was. Kimbrel had a bad postseason, but he had a very good regular season. He's still very good.
Yeah, well, we won. That's all that matters. Okay, so who do you think is hotter, Manny Machado's wife or Bryce Harper's wife?
Well,
do you like blondes or brunettes? I think that's where it boils it down to.
Well, you didn't even look at the picture.
I have looked at the picture.
Oh, definitely, yeah. Manny Machado's wife.
Oh, yeah.
What is wrong with you guys? I think I'm going with Harper's.
Well, then again, that's a lot of makeup.
Yeah, that's I think it depends.
And that nose is 100% fake.
Wow, just circle the areas you don't like, Ian.
All right.
I think I might change my answer.
I think no, it's hold literally. On, hold on. I think they're literally pretty close and comparable levels. I think at that point, it's literally, do you like blondes or brunettes?
Oh, that's okay. A better photo. Is that her wife or is that his wife?
Yeah, that's his wife.
Oh, all right, yeah, definitely Manny Machado's wife.
I'm still going with Harper. Lock it in.
See, that's the problem, is that Manny Machado's wife is hot. Bryce Harper's wife is lovely.
I love it.
Like, I would love for Bryce Harper's wife to make me dinner.
Oh.
I would be concerned if Manny Machado's wife got anywhere near a kitchen.
Wow. And we are moving on to the next topic.
Okay. Ian, Mike Moustakas hasn't signed anywhere yet, right?
Yeah, I guess not, because he did the 1 year deal with the Royals, right?
Right. Yeah. So,
and he did not very well.
No, but
he bet on himself, and it didn't go well.
But that just means he could be really cheap this year. For one,
He would have to be quite cheap for me to advocate for him, because he is a slightly better Michael Franco.
Yeah, I guess at that point you kind of could just stick with Michael Franco. I guess the other third baseman, I can't remember if Josh Donaldson signed anywhere yet.
Oh, please, no thank you. I don't want that. Negative.
You sure? Negative. You want a little Donaldson on your team?
You can take Donaldson.
You like Franco better than Donaldson?
Donaldson appears to be on his last leg.
That happened fast. Can I just say that I did not... That it went from 1 year of us like sucking his dick to like only one leg.
So I
Jed
totally
Lowry, I guess, could be signed as a third baseman if you really want a cheapo one or a above mediocre level, right?
I think I'll just take Keuchel, thank you.
All right, fair enough.
The Kankers.
All right, you guys want to move on to the next topic now?
Yes.
All right. So Patrick, I know you wanted to talk something about football, and I know that Ian's I almost said Phillies.
Oh, I
want to
talk about Foles. But
yeah,
that's
Nick
not
Foles.
Necessary anymore.
Ian, who has like no faith in his Foles.
Not that I didn't have no faith.
I still
that
have
wasn't
more
it.
Faith in Foles than Ian.
It's not that I had no faith. He did fine. He did what he was supposed to do, which was be a good backup quarterback. He's the best backup quarterback in the NFL.
He should take one position.
Why?
Our job.
Why? Talking to the microphone. If you're gonna you
be confident, Susan. Your opinions matter.
Yep.
I just feel like he hasn't been healthy for two seasons now, and obviously Foles is stepping up and doing more than what Wentz can offer right now.
I agree.
Let me just point out here and be the mediator of this argument, and also the person who completely disagrees with Ian. In that, like, only a Philadelphia Phillies or Philadelphia Eagles fan, that is, and Ian Shaw combined, could be looking at the reigning Super Bowl champions and the quarterback who directly led them to the Super Bowl and the quarterback that rode in on his horse and saved their season this year as simply, well, he's the best backup quarterback in the league.
No, all right, that's enough. Nick Foles.
The guy tries so hard and just cannot please his fans.
Nick Foles is a hero. He will never buy his own meal in Philadelphia ever again, and he deserves every bit of praise that he's going to get. But hey, wait a minute. You know what?
How many Super Bowls does he need to win for you people?
All right, counterpoint. After the Phillies won the World Series in 2008, did I come back and say, oh, yes, absolutely give Ryan Howard a five year, $125 million contract.
Apples and oranges.
It is not! Apples and oranges is exactly the same!
No, it's not, because baseball...
Past performance is not predictive. We're smart enough to know that Nick Foles is not the future of this franchise, okay? He did great. He did better, honestly, outperforming every peripheral that every statistician says that he should do. We should trade him to a team where he can be the starting quarterback and have a and sail into a wonderful sunset of his career. We should do right by him and send him somewhere where he can be a starter. He deserves that. But he is not going to be the starter here. We've invested in Wentz. We've decided that he is the one that we want to make the cornerstone of the future of this franchise. And if he can get healthy and stay healthy, I believe that's the better option 5, 6, 7, 8 years from now.
I don't even know who Wentz is.
Here's my bold prediction, and I think Susan's on board with me. Are you ready? Are you ready?
We're ready. Just tell us your prediction.
Eagles are going to go baseline 2-14 next year. At best, they will go 5-11.
Jesus yes. Christ.
I can
and,
see it.
And Carson Wentz will start no more than 9 games.
I can see it.
I can see the second part of that. I don't see the first part of that.
Do you think he starts?
So if they trade away Nick Foles and then Carson Wentz gets hurt in the middle of the year,
yeah, I was going to ask
let's
that.
Just say they're like 500 at that point. You think you're winning any more games, Ian?
Yeah, sure. It's the NFC East. Come on. It's straight garbage. You're telling me that we can't win against the Redskins or the Giants with a backup quarterback? I totally think we can.
I think I'd rather have Eli Manning than whatever backup quarterback is not going to be Nick Foles.
I agree.
Oh, my God. You guys are terrible. I can't believe I'm arguing with two baseball fans about football.
I know more about football than you do. Come on.
I just enjoy pushing your buttons.
I know Richard, yeah. Richard, yeah. I do not take anything personally from you.
I don't even know who Wentz is, okay? Like, I've never heard of this guy in my life.
So Susan, by the way, is almost certainly going to be shouting Go Pack Go here for the next year and a half.
No, she's
say Go Pack Go?
Yeah, she's a Patriots fan.
Oh, that's right, I forgot.
Yeah.
Yeah, so her that's team's important. Still in this, theoretically.
How did you become a Patriots fan if your family's from Minnesota?
They're not from Minnesota.
But your family's in Minnesota. Or Wisconsin, sorry.
He is from that area, so he's been a Pats fan his whole life. So growing up, I was, you know, around Patriots fans.
I getcha. I see how this works.
It's a common curse.
Yeah. Well, yes. I guess it's a blessing for people who like to win, but... All right.
8 straight AFC championship games.
Yeah, it's pretty absurd.
Yeah. All right, guys. Is that it? Is that all you want to talk about?
I don't really have anything else to say about Foles and Wentz, except, you know.
Is Carson Wentz married?
How many days until pitchers and catchers report? And yes, Wentz is married.
Are you going to look up his wife too, Pat?
Yes, I am. That's what I'm doing right now. Whoa! Okay, I think this takes the cake.
Yes, Carson Wentz's wife is extremely pretty.
I don't know. This will be the judge of that.
Foles' wife.
Well, according to Ian, Nick Foles, his wife and the horse he rode in on is like second rate. So that's Carson Wentz's wife.
It's a really tiny photo. She's really pretty, but I can't tell from
Tom
this
Brady
photo.
Doesn't count because he's
like
married
2 feet
mom.
Taller than her. I can't tell if he's really tall or she's really short.
I still think that Carson Wentz looks like Prince Harry.
He looks like me 5 years ago.
You know
ago.
That Ian looks, or that Richard looks like Prince William.
Shut up. People said that to me the other day, and I'm really like, wait, that is
the
that
hairline of royalty, Richard, of royalty.
Of royalty.
Thanks. Is that a different woman?
Well, no. So the third picture is Carson Wentz and his wife, and the fourth picture is Nick Foles and his wife.
Oh, okay. I get you.
So that is a different man and a different woman.
Okay. Okay.
Okay, anyway, can we move on?
Yeah,
so,
sure.
So I think Richard's hairline is laying back and thinking of England, right?
Kind of, yeah. Maybe that's why I need to go to England to get it to come back out again.
Oh, you didn't get that joke.
Go to England and you let the rains water it, and then the hair will grow back.
Are these rains?
No, Ian. He needs to go and bless the rains down in Africa.
God bless the brains down in Africa.
Jesus.
Oh gosh.
Oh man. Yeah, I've been saying that that I've been holding the beachhead for my hair. Like the line has gone no further, but I can feel the losing battle. It's making me really surprised.
It looks dignified, Richard. You look seasoned. Well,
thank you. I'm glad somebody thinks so.
You should get some Rogaine.
I probably should try it just to see if
you're you're at that sweet spot right now where
is a sweet spot.
It makes you look dignified.
Sweet spot of Rogaine.
It could be worse. It could be like balding from like the crown area at the very least.
That would be much worse.
I prefer where it's coming from right now than there. But that being said, I would have preferred my hair to not have stopped growing.
Is your dad? I can't remember your dad. Is your dad balding?
Yeah, he's balding. But it's supposed to be on the mother's side, and my mom's side has like nothing but guys with thick hair. So I don't understand what happened.
I don't know that that's true.
That's what they say. I'm not a Genesis.
The sayers of things.
I don't know. Genesists and stuff. You know, Genesis. Scientists.
Genesis.
That's not
like
a word.
The guy with the tablets.
You know, the science about genes and stuff. What are those scientists guys?
And then the Lord struck down. I think Richard's his name was Levi. Because his town hath.
That's
too
gene.
Many
that's Genesis, you bastard.
What?
Because Levi Strauss.
No, keep
genes.
Going.
Richard, host. Jeans.
All right, so
his name was Strauss.
Yeah. All right, game talk, guys. I don't have a segue for this. I've played a couple of games lately. I don't know if you guys have been playing any video games lately, but I'll start.
X-Plane. A lot of X-Plane.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's fun.
What have you been playing?
X-Plane.
Oh.
It kind
for a second,
goes
I thought you
theme.
Said. For a second, I thought you said X-Wing, and I was going
to
be very.
Yeah, I
excited.
Thought so too, and I was about to wait for a second to see if Ian had a comment. But X-Play, what is that? What is X-Play?
Okay, I'm just filled with disappointment.
It's a flight sim on Steam.
Oh, is it that flight sim that I keep seeing videos pop up on Reddit where the guy is the air traffic controller and he's like directing planes and being like really like funny and sarcastic.
I think that guy's playing Flight Simulator X, which is a Microsoft product, but it's a similar concept.
Okay. Are you doing this because of your flight trading stuff?
I mean, I'm doing it more for fun, but it's a really great simulator. And so, like, it really models all the aircraft really well. So, and it's fun. It's a great way to waste time during the workday.
Is it free, or how much does it cost?
Oh, it's a paid game. It's like $60.
Oh, wow. Okay.
You can get it on sale, though.
Those cockpits aren't going to model themselves, Richard.
Yeah, I guess not.
Well, that's the crazy thing is that like the base aircraft that come with it are fine, but if you really want true-to-life modeled planes and everything, you have to pay them extra because all these companies make them for the games.
Gross.
And some of them are like ridiculously expensive, like over $100.
What?
No joke.
That doesn't surprise me at all. All
right, pass on me then. So, Pat, have you played any Destiny 2 recently since last time, since you got the Forsaken expansion?
Yeah, I mean, I'm playing it sporadically. It is holding my interest okay. But,
yeah, so I've heard interesting things recently while listening to other places talk about it, and I was curious about the loot system because that would be something to sort of maybe pull me back in. I kind of heard that they sort of have gone they took the bumpers out of the lanes finally, and they're kind of going a little bit more crazy with the loot than they used to. And I wanted to hear your opinion on whether or not looting is actually feels good and fun again.
Like, yes
does it
no.
Does it feel like Diablo kind of loot or and Borderlands 3, or does it feel like what it like? It felt like their loot was kind of stingy in a weird way. I never played it for looting in that sense.
Well, the problem is that like in order to fully understand this concept with Destiny, you have to really hear the whole story. Now, I'm not going to bore anybody with this, okay? But the bottom line is that if you look at it in a sentence or two, is that Destiny 1 really sucked.
Well, yeah.
And Bungie tried to make it better through the expansions.
Yep.
Through the Taken King expansion onward, one of the big things that they did was they made it a Ludapalooza. Okay. It was never supposed to be that way as a game. It's just they realized that they really needed to say they were sorry. Then Destiny 2 came out, and I was actually fairly happy with the loot system in Destiny 2. Even the only gripe I had with Destiny 2 loot was that there weren't enough guns. Like they only had a really small pool of weapons and armor.
Right.
So like you would just get the same thing a lot. But otherwise I think it was fine. But again, Destiny or Bungie realized that they've kind of screwed up with Destiny 2 and that it kind of sucked. And so they've loosened the reins on it again. The biggest positive for loot now with Destiny 2, in my opinion, is they brought back the gun quests and stuff. So
gun quests.
Yeah, so like the idea in Destiny 1 is you would have these sometimes convoluted, long and arduous quests where you, at the end of the game, tree, you would get this awesome gun and it would be unique and do cool things and everything. None of that was in Destiny 2. And they kind of come back with that a little bit, cool. Which is kind of cool. And like I said, it keeps you playing.
Yeah.
Obviously, people don't like grinds and stuff like that. I never had a big problem with grinds myself, but if you want to be rewarded for doing a bunch of random shit all the time, that can really help as well. But again, like I said in my original thing, if you've played Destiny or Destiny 2, and you're like, this really isn't that fun, like any changes to the loot table or anything like that, I really don't think that that's going to change your
I don't know. I always enjoy having, even if I know that it's there, I always enjoy having the carrot on the stick. It gets me to keep doing something. So I'm perfectly fine. Since I bought it, there's a part of me that's always like, well, let's try to go back and see if we can salvage some of the money we spent on this and to see if it's fun again. So hearing that loot could be a little bit more Ludapalooza, hearing that there's a quest to get a unique gun, that at least is enough to pique my interest into thinking like, well, you know, the gameplay was fine. That wasn't the issue. But there's something more to do in this. Let's maybe we can take a gander again.
Well, I mean, I encourage you to do it. You know how much. So I personally think it's a great game and everybody would enjoy it. But I mean, I know what your,
tastes are. Yeah.
Your tastes are.
Well, we'll see. I have been playing a couple of games lately. I'm just going to go over these quick because I don't know if you guys will have too much to actually say about them, but I decided to delve into the 1995 classic Chrono Trigger, which I highly recommend to anyone, even though it's old as shit. it's a lot of fun to play because came out on the Super Nintendo, and I'm playing around, and my story that I thought was interesting about this game and what sold me on the rest of this game was, in the very beginning, you're a character named Chrono, and you're going to this, like, little fair, and you bump into this girl who's, like, you know, really happy and everything, but as you bump into her, she loses her necklace, and you've got to go pick the necklace up, and she's like, oh, hey, can I have my necklace back? And a typical, like, you know, old-school Nintendo, you can say yes or no, and I said no, because I wanted to be funny to see if the game would catch on, and she's like, oh. And that was it. But the doesn't progress or do anything different. So I was like, all right, fine. Yeah, here's your necklace. Let's carry on. And she's like, all right, thanks. Let's enjoy the fair together. And I was like, all right, whatever. So you go around with this girl. And during the time, there's like a vendor. And she's like, well, wouldn't it be funny to try to see what my necklace was worth now? And so I was like, yeah, that sounds funny. And the vendor says, well, it's too expensive. I'm not going to buy this. So later on, you move around. And there's a pie laying out there that if you eat it, you get your health back. But there's an old guy next to the pie who says, I'm such a lucky man. My wife made me this pie for lunch. It's so great. And I would not stop eating this pie every single time the screen would load back in again. So what this all has to do with is later on, through some fluke thing, the princess ends up getting sucked through this time travel wormhole thing. And you have to go back and save her. And so you come in, bring her back, and the moment you bring her back into the present time, you're arrested because the guards think you actually kidnapped the princess. And so you go to trial, and they end up reviewing you as a person and involving character study of, like they bring in all, like, saying, like, well, what kind of person is Chrono? Could he, is he actually saving the princess? Was he saving her, or was he actually trying to kidnap her? And they go and review all those choices that I didn't think that they were paying attention to, where they say, like, oh, he didn't check on the princess when he bumped into her. He didn't try to give her back her necklace. He just said no. He tried to sell the necklace. And then, like, the old guy comes in and goes, he ate my pie! And I was like, oh my god, I didn't realize you were watching! I was like, holy crap, this game is, like, 1995, and it's reviewing choices that I had no idea that he was paying attention to. Like, I didn't know these mechanics existed back then. And so, like, I was... From that, I was just like, I'm sold on this game. I want to see how the rest of this game goes. And I haven't beaten it yet. I've only just gotten, I think, like, 5 characters right now. Like, I just got the frog character, for those who have played it out there. And it's a lot of... I highly recommend this game. It's cheap right now. I know a lot of people have given negative stuff about it, the Steam Edition one. But it's fixed up really nicely now that it actually works very well on the PC. But so I've been playing that one, and then I finished, I don't want to talk too much about this game, but Wise 8, I finally delved in that one. I've never played a Wise game before, but I wanted to see what the hubbub was about. It was a great game that I felt like was a fantastic merge between Mega Man Legends and Dark Cloud 2, and just did not stick the landing. It went super anime generic, where it didn't sound like the people writing the story knew what they wanted to do with the ending, so they just picked, like, generic ending number one out, where everyone got amnesia, and those who didn't remember the girl, and now the girl, like, is a goddess, so that way, for the next game, with Adol Christian, he doesn't have to, you know, remember anything from this. And I thought it was a cheap ending, and I thought that for the love of God, there's so much tragedy in this girl's background that I was like, can she just be happy for once? Dear God. But anyway, up until that point, I thought it was a fantastic game, even if it was, like, a shallow combat system. But the one I really want to talk about today is, I wanted to talk about Celeste. I thought that this is an interesting game that I think you guys might be curious about. I want to say that I've never seen a game that I've hated to play so much, but have been thinking about nonstop and wanting to play more afterwards.
Sounds like some of my exes.
Oh my god.
like Susan.
So Celeste is it's a very 2D platformer looking game.
I'm already out.
It's made to look like the old school platforming things, and the story is Madeline is a girl who has a history of panic attacks and anxiety, and in an attempt to try to grab wrestle some of her control in her life, chooses to try to climb this mountain called Celeste. During this, she has to face a numerous amount of challenges, a lot of it being the horrible platforming, spikes, snow, strong winds, and ultimately, herself. This game is interesting because it starts off looking like a generic platformer, and then immediately starts turning into a very good story about this girl who, very in the beginning, you immediately can tell that she has something wrong with her, and it's all in with her head and her anxiety. And the way the game showcases the anxiety is, like, when I say, like, she has to face herself, I mean, literally, at a certain point, the Dark Madeline comes out and is, like, hounding her the entire way up this mountain. And, man, it does something. Like, I think everyone in the world has a little bit of anxiety with them. Obviously, some have way more of it. But there is so much relatable with, like, that self-doubt and that, like, paranoid, controlling kind of a feel to yourself that that can often paralyze you. Or make you just back out of decisions, that I think it's so cool to see this game do this with Dark Madeline facing, like, Madeline and making her, like, seriously doubt herself in this climb the entire way through. And it's so cool to see that, and, like, at a certain point, you have to confront her, and the fights aren't really fights in this game because your only combat or your only controls are jump and dash. And so you have to sort of dash into things in order to make them happen and whatnot. And so when you do the confrontation, it's, I don't want to say too much on the confrontation because I don't want to give away, but like, it's really cool the way they make use of what Madeline can do in an attempt to fight against Dark Madeline. But man, it's, I was turned off because of the graphics. I was turned off because of the like 2D platforming, but it's one of the best soundtracks I've ever heard in video games, and it's a super compelling story that I've enjoyed so far. I'm almost done with the game, I think, but the reason I hate the game right now is, oh my god, they've used so many spikes. It's so many spikes jumping through this that it, like, instantly kills you every single time, and it's a pain in the ass to get through it, but getting through it, it's kind of an interesting achievement feel to me. So, anyway, that's the last. Those are the three games I played recently. I just wanted to get them off my chest because I've enjoyed the heck out of all of them in different ways.
You're Richard being a snooty indie gamer.
I know. I mean, it's always been there. I've always been sort of dipping my feet into indie games. But wow.
You think you're better than me? You think you're better than me?
Yes.
Well, the only thing that's left then is Ian.
Oh, what man.
What have you been playing?
Oh, well, I mean, I've been pretty busy with, you know, trying not to freeze to death in the frozen north, but I've managed to play a little bit on my Switch playing the Let's Go Pikachu, which is fun.
How far into that are you?
I'm in Vermilion. I just beat Lieutenant Surge, or at least, no, I haven't beaten him yet. I'm about to face Lieutenant Surge. So, you know, it's still pretty early, but I like the first thing, the catch mechanic that, like, initially I wasn't sure whether I'd like it. I actually do.
I've heard that.
For anyone that doesn't know, it switches up the gameplay where instead of walking through high grass and getting into a bunch of random encounters and fighting Pokemon in order to level up, it adopts the Pokemon Go mechanic where you can encounter Pokemon and you just throw Pokeballs at them to catch them.
I love it.
And you're like, well, that doesn't sound as much fun. But actually, it gives you, that system gives you a little more agency when it comes to the random encounters, because now you can see the Pokemon in the high grass and choose whether you want to walk up to them and encounter them or not. So you don't have to like walk through caves and encounter like 1,000 Zubat like you had to in the old games.
I've been wanting this for years.
Yeah, and so also the other big thing is, well, first of all, these encounters, when you catch Pokemon, they give you EXP. So it's just like they would if you were battling them. So there's no loss of experience when it comes to leveling your party.
I think Ultra Moon started that, or Sun and Moon started that, right?
Yeah. And so, I
don't know. Maybe, it was either that or X and Y.
I think so. But and then the big thing is, and the thing that I think is actually the most interesting, is if you catch the same Pokemon over and over again in a row, once you get to, it starts what's called like a catch streak.
Yep.
And when you get to about 12 to 13 catches, it increases the spawn rates of rare Pokemon in that zone.
Oh, cool. So not just shinies, but like actual, the rare ones.
Yes. So like, for example, there's an early area where I caught like 12 Growlithe in a row, and then all of a sudden it's like there was one or two Chansey always walking around that area, because that was the rare spawn for that route, whereas before you would just have to like walk like back and forth over and over for like a long time hoping that the random number generator eventually gave you whatever Pokemon was the rare Pokemon for that route.
Right.
But now it gives you a little bit of agency where you can get a bunch of EXP from getting a catch streak, and then you're rewarded by a rare Pokemon spawn.
Nice. Sort of like you got rid of all the common, like, annoying Pokemon out of there, so the rare ones came out.
And then all of the Pokemon that you farm from these catches, just like in Pokemon Go, you can trade them in for candy, which in this one, it will help you to level up essentially your EV stats, the equivalent of EV stats in this. Mm-hmm. Kind of working how the, you know how like protein and HP,
protein, calcium, and zinc and whatnot.
Yeah, it's kind of the same way that worked in the older games.
Dude, that's awesome.
So like they've, you know, at first I was very skeptical about blending Pokemon Go into this, but now I actually think that the system works pretty well.
My question is, so I've heard about, I saw my friends down in Newport News playing this game, and then I heard from my roommate about it. Tell me about the rival, because when I first saw it, my immediate thought was, I've never seen a character murdered quite like what they did to Blue in this game. And then I find out that there's actually two rivals. So what's the story on, like, did they actually kill Blue's personality, or am I just, did I overreact and I actually saw the new, you know, the wimpy rival?
So, like, it's, so what I'm, like, yeah, you, I think you're overreacting. I don't know that your rival isn't Blue.
That's weird.
Your rival is, like, it's essentially, like, some watered-down version, like, of your rival. Just like all Pokemon games nowadays, your rival isn't a jerk anymore, which that is the biggest thing in, like, Pokemon games I don't really appreciate that they did over years, was to tone down your rival into just being a friend.
It just doesn't make me want to beat them anymore. Like, it just makes me feel like they're, you know, they're there.
Now, yeah. But now, like, again, I'm pretty early yet, but, like, Blue does make appearances in this game.
Okay.
But he's more of a mentor to the two trainers. Like, it essentially sets it up so that the timeline is after when Red and Blue were in it. And so, like, Blue shows up as sort of, like, this kind of, like, mentor figure, like, basically passing on wisdom from when he was going through his Pokemon journey. So it's kind of like cameo appearances. I don't know if it's going to evolve into something like more significant than that. But Blue is not your rival. They didn't like ruin him.
Okay. That's interesting. I'm curious to see how this ends, because I wonder if Blue is the eighth gym leader then,
or that would be interesting.
Yeah. If they had made Blue into like a wimpy rival, my fear was like, man, throughout the games now, we've seen kind of an interesting character arc with Blue, because of the fact of where he started in Red and Blue, and then he's the gym leader in Gold and Silver, and then in Sun, Moon, Ultra Moon, Ultra Sun, he's vacationing literally with Red, and he's now the chilled one, and Red actually seems like he needs to loosen up a little bit. I think, like, I was worried that they had destroyed that character arc, but it sounds like my fears are,
so far that is not what I have seen, but, like, again, I'm still relatively early, but I'd say the gameplay is fun. I like it.
It looks fantastic. I have to say that it looks really nice.
It's a very good looking game. I would say the one thing that, like, is slightly annoying is that the difficulty curve does appear to have been tamed down, but I have heard that in the end game it does spike up a little bit, so that's good.
But the end game has always felt like it's short. Like, it's never felt like we have a long end game with Pokemon.
Yeah. This feels more like cathartic than necessarily challenging. The gameplay is smooth and it's fun and it's intuitive and it makes sense and doesn't seem pointless. And the EV training and whatnot, they've taken something that was extremely tedious and repetitive before and made it a little more easily accessible and rewarding.
Can you tell what your EVs are? Like, is there a menu that lets you see it?
I mean, it's pretty much the same as like before, where you look at each of your base stats for each of your stats, and then you can, like, you know, pick whatever candy you want to use and use it. I haven't looked into natures and if they have the same effect and stuff as they did before. I haven't really metagamed it out too much.
And when you're playing the adventure, I never feel like you should metagame it. I feel like you just play the adventure and then worry about that later.
Yeah, and then worry about that stuff after the fact. So I haven't really done that yet. So the jury's out. You could probably look it up.
Okay. But, well, cool. Makes me feel a little bit better about that game now,
actually. Yeah, I still have to play. Like, I mean, this is the thing. Like, I'm, you know, hopefully now that things are starting to settle with the move, I can.
You've got like three open world games you need to finish.
I know. I really want to try Zelda. So yeah. I still have that. I still have Witcher. Like, there's a lot to get to.
Oh, man. Witcher.
The good news, good and bad news, is good news is I have Martin Luther King Day off.
Ooh.
Bad news is Susan will be at work that day. She starts her temp job Friday. But then swing it back around to the good news is that I can play video games.
Yay! So roller coaster.
So maybe I'll probably break out either Witcher or Zelda on that day and give it a go. So
Yeah, I'm curious about your opinion for both. I think because you guys both really loved Horizon Zero Dawn and it came out the same time, I played Zelda first and then I had difficulty getting used to Horizon Zero Dawn because of what Zelda did to me. That I'm curious to see what you think of it coming off of traditional open worlds.
Yeah, but it's been a while since I've played Horizon, so I feel like I won't need like a palate cleanser. Like I'll probably be good to just get into it.
Yeah. So. No, I think I will say give it a couple like... Give it a little bit of time, because I think the opening is a little slow until you get your hang glider thing, and then the game just opens up in a way, and I'm very curious to see what you think of it, because I feel like you will probably, like Patrick was lukewarm about it, I think you'll, like I feel like it's more made to you, Ian, than anyone else.
Okay. See, because you know me, Richard.
You love the idea of planning out your own path and your own quest and your own story. Because like Minecraft, and that's why Minecraft kind of appeals to you. And this isn't like so free in that sort of a sense that you pick your projects like that. But like it has that feel of how much you basically wherever if you see that like you know see that mountain over there. I'm going to go climb that mountain. And the game lets you do it. And it doesn't care. It doesn't wall things off from you or whatever. It just lets you go and do your things.
That was one of the reasons I enjoyed Skyrim so much.
Yeah, like the only limitations this game has is it's like physics of the game. And like it goes really well with like how many, like even though there's a lot of physics in here, it because of how much there is, it lets you do a lot. And I think that that's kind of an interesting thing. So I'm curious to see what you think of the experience. So
do you mind if we move on to Bird Box?
Yes. I forgot that we were going to talk about Bird Box, honestly, but yes, let's do it. I just finished it today. Patrick finished it literally minutes before the podcast.
Yeah. So like real quick, some like preface here is that the whole reason I recommended that we all watch Bird Box is because Netflix recently put out they never do this. They never tell what their viewership is, but I guess they are so proud of it. And they made it be known that Bird Box was the most watched movie on Netflix in like the first week that it's been out, like of any movie in its opening week.
Weird.
On Netflix. So like everyone watched it and like everyone I've talked to has been watching it and like it's apparently a thing. So
I don't know why.
I thought maybe we should all watch it and then we can talk about it.
I don't know why. Sorry. I've already buried the lead about my opinion of this movie.
So who wants to go first?
Oh, man.
I hate Sandra Bullock.
Okay, so here it goes. It is, what would happen if M. Night Shyamalan geared up with the guy who wrote Final Destination 5. Spoilers, it was written by the guy who wrote Final Destination 5.
Right. See, I got the impression it was more like M. Night Shyamalan fucked John Krasinski, and they had
made a Hallmark movie.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
So real quick before like we get into the nitty gritty, did anyone like this movie?
Did anyone what?
Did
this
anybody
movie?
What?
Did anyone enjoy this film?
I didn't.
Okay, I thought it was passable. I think it was better. It was better than most original Netflix
movies.
It's
mediocre level at best, is what I
Susan.
Thought.
Susan,
I would say it's just okay.
Yeah,
it
wasn't my favorite.
I've seen worse disaster movies.
Susan and I pretty much like thought that it was like a very like solid 5 or 6 out of 10. I think.
Yeah, that's about right. I'd say about 5 out of 10 for me is where I would throw it.
All right, so Patrick, go on.
Yeah, so there's nothing like... So it's obvious why it's like an M. Night Shyamalan movie, except unlike M. Night Shyamalan movies where there's a reveal that falls super flat.
Yeah.
Like, there just is no reveal.
There's no twist! Like, hey, there's nothing! It doesn't go anywhere!
Wait a minute, has anyone here not seen The Happening?
I don't think I've seen The Happening, but I don't mind being spoiled.
You guys have not seen The Happening?
No.
No.
So this is hilarious, because Patrick, you made the comparison that this is like an M. Night Shyamalan movie. So without having seen The Happening, this cribs a significant thing from The Happening. The Happening was the movie with Mark Wahlberg where...
Right, yeah, I know what it's about.
Oh, okay. So, Richard, do you know what it's about?
I I don't remember off the top of my head, but if you say it, I'll probably remember.
So what's the whole premise of The Happening was that, like, all of a sudden, a bunch of people, like, were committing suicide for no reason.
Okay.
And so, like, basically the exact same premise of this film.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, anybody watching, listening to this podcast, major spoilers for Bird Box, you know, so probably tune out.
If you hadn't already guessed from my scream of there's no twist. Yeah.
So, I mean, but, like, the thing was in The Happening, and, like, this is, like, The Happening was a terrible film. But the big twist in The Happening was that the trees were giving off pollen or some sort of, like, pollen or pheromone or whatever that caused people to commit suicide because humans were killing the earth. And it was the earth's way of, like, ridding humanity. And so that was the whole thing in that. But, like, the main plot point of people killing themselves for, like, no fucking reason was, like, directly cribbed from The Happening.
Yeah. Only, unlike The Happening, we didn't get any, like, real explanation of why
we'll get to that. So, Patrick, sorry, I keep cutting you off. Continue.
No, it's okay. So, if this would have been an episode of a television show, like, okay, if this would have been an episode of Black Mirror
or Fringe,
all right, and obviously condensed to that time frame to that time frame, then I really think that this would have been effective and enjoyable.
I actually said that. I said I think it's an hour and 20 minutes too long.
Yep.
Definitely felt long. Susan and I both thought that it felt its length. Like, didn't we got to, like, an hour and a half in, and both of us at the same time, like, how much longer is in this movie? And, like, we flipped on, like, the Netflix thing. It was like, holy shit, there's still half an hour to go.
Yeah.
Like, at the same time, both of us were like, is this almost over?
Well, my big problem is that they just wasted so much time.
Yeah.
It's just like I said in the chat, what, there's 40 minutes left, and
they were adding characters.
Yeah, like, we're adding characters, they're not removing them. And it's so obvious from the beginning that she ends up on her own with the two kids.
Yeah.
Like, that you're like, okay, well, all these people are going to die somehow. And the other
thing
that
really
got,
and just steal a car.
Yeah. Who knows what happened to them?
Yeah.
But, like,
their characters were so pointless.
All of them were pointless. There were so many pointless characters that I just didn't give two fucks about them.
The other thing that really got me about this is just how mind-numbingly stupid they felt the audience was.
Yeah.
Because I feel that, you know, a lot of movies are formulaic, and that was the word that I was going to use, was formulaic. But that's not really the case here. It is formulaic in a way, but it's more that it doesn't think that the audience is intelligent, because every single plot point had, like, a direct connection and introduction prior to you seeing it. So, so people committing mass suicide. Well, we heard the news reports in Russia before she goes to the doctor. Okay. Like, the whole, like, people running in front of traffic and doing crazy things, like the lady burning herself, like the people who are psychotic and can see, but we never really find out why. Like,
she gets attacked by that. One before they actually meet one in the past. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. So then once the next new character that we see, the guy in the grocery store, is like, oh, that's obviously going to be a psychotic guy.
And it was,
And it was. And so it's just like, you see what I mean? It's like they
had to beat each plot point. Like, they had to hit it twice, right?
Yep.
Because that's how it happened. Like, they hit the psychotic thing twice. They hit the suicide thing twice. They hit multiple, like, plot point aspects twice in order to be like, hey, do you get it? Hey, do you get it?
Don't be unprepared for this coming up.
So true. But, and we're left with no answers. And I feel like my overall review of the movie would be completely different if we spent the last 15, 20 minutes learning about what was going on.
Yeah.
And one more thing before I kind of conclude my feelings is I was convinced because of the filmmaking and because of just the how they were shooting the shots in the first 20 minutes of the film, that it was going to be cell phones.
I almost thought the same thing. I may not cell phones, but something gimmicky like that.
Well, because of how they, and I
GoPros.
Rewatch it if you don't know what I mean, like at least the first few minutes. But the way they were presenting people using their cell phones, it at least to me, it really was like, oh man, this is going to be a cheesy thing about how the radiation in your cell phone is like frying your brain and causing you to kill yourself.
How
or
is it that that would have been a better plot device well, then than it would what have it
been,
was?
Then it would have been a particularly low quality Black Mirror episode.
Yeah.
Well, maybe, but it would be better than what it is because like
I hate that concept, and I still would have preferred that over what we got.
So right, like I'm in the camp that I love. I want to know. Like I'd rather know something bad than not know it all.
Yeah. Really? Because The Happening was really fucking stupid.
So can I go? Because so starting this movie off, Sandra Bullock is just yelling at us. Like it's just her sitting down and being angry, yelling, and then you find out she's yelling at children, and not a great way to start it off, because, again...
it was very jarring, right?
Well, yeah, but the problem I have is I've seen enough Sandra Bullock, like, movies that I really just don't like her as an actor because of the fact that she overacts a lot. Like, it just seems like it's, like, okay, calm down, it's probably not that serious, or if it is, there's a better way to approach this, but you just seem like you're overcompensating for something.
Yeah, it's pretty weird, because I felt like Sandra Bullock was easily the best part of the film.
Ugh, maybe. I mean, but that's just because, like, I don't like Sandra Bullock, and I kind of agree with you too, because I just didn't like anything else on the movie. So, like, I'm kind of, even though I don't like her overacting, at the very least, she was probably the more competent character in this, like, whole movie. So, it's, but from her weird, like, from that character's weird thing about children, and, like, to her interactions and the other characters' interactions with each other in the show, like, it made me hate how much time I spent in that goddamn house. And when it flashed to the future, it wasn't much better because it was with her and boy and girl. Like, she didn't even name her kids at anything. Like, I hated so much of how cringy listening to everyone were in that house and how people did stuff that, like, they almost were there as this is a horror movie and these are stereotypes, but then they kind of, like, chickened out and they just, like, pushed the characters away quickly. So you have, like, the hot girl who's also happens to be a recruit in the police academy, and then she goes away. Like, she just drives away with the guy for no, like, we don't know why. They just dipped out. Despite starting off as, like, a hard ass, like, she's like, oh, you know, not in your life, and then all of a sudden immediately falls for this drug addict guy. It's just, then, like, with the guy who owns the house, like, obviously something, or not owns, the old guy, what's his name, the guy whose wife dies in the beginning.
I don't remember his name.
But, like, they kind of hint at something going on in his past that, like, made him this jaded asshole. But, like, then never go into it. Like, and then he has this redemption moment briefly, and then they still just never really give us any sort of connection between why he was an asshole and why he would still try to save the people in the house. Like, this movie frustrated me so much, and I think that's the emotion I got from this, because I didn't know what was going on, and I kept trying to make sense of it. And then they suggested, like, some thing out there, and it never really clicked until they went to the grocery store that it was something. Like, they just, I thought it was just, like, the wind being effective, and they were trying to make a dramatic scene about it. But it never seemed to me like the characters ever got to that point of deciding or finding or seeing that there was something out there, because if they'd seen it, then they would have gone insane just like everyone else. But they never explained, one, why some people were able to see it and then be, like, either suicidal, or why they all of a sudden became cult worshippers of it. They never explained what it is, other than that crazy guy's drawings, which didn't tell us anything. It just shows us pictures of something. They never tried to show that, like, despite the uplifting ending, that anything is going to be okay, because they never addressed the issue. They just band-aided it and said it's fine, which would work in a show about, or a movie about, like, characters that you cared about and their journey and hardships. But I just didn't care about Sandra Bullock's character. I didn't care about her children, because I only saw the children for, like, 5 minutes most of the time. And, like, if you added up all their showings, I think it was about 5 to 10 minutes, maybe. And like, I'm sorry, but that's not enjoyable. That's not a fun ending. Like, this movie, I hate this movie because it wasted 2 hours of my life. It made me hate Ian for making me watch it. It made me hate Netflix for having it, like, plastered on it. And it makes me just jaded about the country for being gaga over this movie. That's what this movie has done to me. I'm done.
You've been waiting patiently for an hour to talk about something actually...
Yes, I'm actually curious about Susan's opinion of this.
And unfortunately, women's opinions don't matter. So that will be all for today.
Oh, wow. We are gentlemen. Right.
No, I don't think it was her best film. I do like Sandra Bullock. I disagree with Richard.
I know I'm in the minority for this. I fully accept that.
But I don't think it was her best film. I think the best way Ian put it was they paid a lot of money for her and then didn't put a lot of money into the actual film itself.
Oh, man, I can see that.
Yeah, like, so does anyone else get the idea? Like, this really felt like whoever came up with this concept.
It was a book. It's based on a book.
All right. Well, that actually makes a decent amount of sense. Like,
is there a second one?
To me, whoever did this, it feels a lot like a high schooler who had seen a bunch of different source materials that they really liked, and they took like two or three concepts that they really liked and tried to like put them together into a film, but they couldn't. They were more interested in the concepts than any like clear vision for a story or any clear vision for the characters. Like, that's what it felt like to me. Cause like, to me, this was three different movies in one. Like, it starts out as a disaster movie.
Yep.
Right. Where everything is chaos. Everyone's dying. Then it turns into like a Resident Evil flick where they're trapped in a location, or any kind of zombie movie, really, like where they're trapped in a location with an unknown threat or known threat. And they're trying to survive while members of the party are slowly being killed off. And then it ends as like some sort of as like The Road, where like you have a post-apocalypse where a character is trying to make it to another a supposed safe haven location with their loved ones, you know, through a desperate situation. It was like three different films in one, and none of them were executed well. And like, to me, the best part of the film were the actors. I actually thought that the talent they got was pretty good. Like the one, the Asian guy, he's in like a lot of Law and Order SVU episodes, and like he was very good. I like Sandra Bullock. I like the old guy. Like, I thought he was acted well. I didn't think he was written well, but I thought he was acted well. Like, that was one of the weird things, was like, I didn't mind the actors hardly at all, but like there was so much lack of clarity and focus with the story. And then like, even besides that, there was also like no inspiration with the shot composition or anything of this film. Like, all of the shooting was like shot in like a way of like a cheap sci-fi original flick. It very much felt like the person who came up with this, like, they thought of the concept and then they thought about, wait a minute, I'm running into a roadblock because this doesn't work. I'll introduce a new concept to make it work. So the best example of this is after the initial catastrophe where everyone's killing themselves, and when they lock themselves in the house and they figure out, okay, if we look at these things, whatever they are, we'll kill ourselves. And so they're like, well, we won't look at these things. And they black out the car, they wear blindfolds, whatever. Once that has been discovered, there's no threat. And instantly there's no more threat, right? Because this is like, did you guys see A Quiet Place?
No, it's on my list.
No, I
haven't. That's another obvious film that this one clearly appears to have been inspired by, even if it's thought, not.
It's off of a book.
I thought it was The Road or whatever?
If it's not, because like a book like either came out before A Quiet Place or whatever, like it's the comparison that's obvious to make. So the difference between the two and why A Quiet Place was so much more effective was the whole thing with A Quiet Place is if you make too much noise, these monsters can hear, like super, super hearing, will hear your noise and they will come and kill you. So the obvious reason why that works so much better as a concept than this one is because it's so much easier to just say, well, just keep your fucking eyes closed forever and you won't die. versus don't make noise ever and you won't die. It is so much harder to not make noise for the rest of your life than it is to just keep your fucking eyes closed or not even look out the window. It was very lazily done. Whereas like, oh, they can't get into the house, whatever these things are. Like, there's no threat of
them.
Like,
I know. And also, that was another thing. I didn't understand why it couldn't enter the house or the car.
It was arbitrary rules because, and this is the thing, this is why it's lazy writing. Because there was a bunch of arbitrary rules that were in place, not because it made sense for whatever this creature was or entity was or whatever. It was because it made sense because of the limitations of the script.
Yeah.
Because they wouldn't know what to do if they could get into the house. Then they'd be OP, whatever these things were.
Yep.
And like, but then here's the thing. Like, they knew, whoever the writer was, knew, oh, there's no threat now if they know just to keep their eyes closed. So what do we do to increase the stakes? Oh, what if crazy people don't die because they look at these creatures and they just go more crazy and try to get everyone else to look at them? That way there's enough of a threat to be dangerous again. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, about how this but like, it's writing? Not always. It wasn't always crazy people. Like that one professor guy comes in. And
well, he was supposedly crazy, just like low grade crazy. Like, yeah, you know, low, not like,
he, like clearly crazy. He at least had his shit together. Yeah, but then crazy. I just thought that he like a bunch of crazy guys forced him to see, and for some reason he didn't go kill himself. No, I thought
he was crazy. Just hit it.
So I want to add some more details here. Because I just read the whole thing about the book.
Okay.
So the film looks to be a...
He turned the script in before the rough draft in before The Happening released and before the Road movie came out. Exactly. So his ass is covered, guys. It's not a copy.
So it looks to be like the only true additions that were added to the film. Compared to the book, is the romances. It does not look like there were any romances in the book, especially with Tom and everything.
Interesting.
Black guy.
I thought the Tom one was kind of not forced, but like unnecessary. Like I could see it not being in there, and I don't think I would have missed a beat in terms of the story.
They needed a way to cover another 20 minutes. And
why? You don't need this much time! Ugh!
So, also...
So long.
Like, I think that the ending is a little bit more grim in the book, in the sense that, I mean, they still go, they find Rick's place and everything like that, but Rick isn't in a school for the blind. He's running this, like, center where survivors can go, and many of the survivors have intentionally made them and their children blind.
I was thinking that was going to be the twist I thought that they were going to like either cut their eyes out or they were going to like burn them or something. I don't know, but I thought they were going to try to make her blind.
But anyway, the book does not explain what is going on. So like, it's not like it was a bad thing. Also, and more telling, I think, Ian, I think this really goes along with our theme as we talk about movies, is that the film adaption was first sold to Universal, and it was supposed to be directed by Andy Muschietti, who is the guy who did It
and Mama,
and whatever. Well, for whatever reason, it doesn't say in this little spiel, but it doesn't matter. It was then released by Universal and sold to Netflix, and they got Sandra Bullock to do it, and then whoever Suzanne Beer is.
As the director.
To direct it.
Yeah.
So.
And John Malkovich.
Obviously, like, Eric.
That makes sense.
Eric Heiser, or whatever his name is, the guy who wrote Final Destination 5, obviously did not screenwrite a very strong thing for Universal. So Universal's like, we got to get rid of this. And they gave it to them.
He also did for Arrival. So, I mean, he's got something.
A lot of people hated Arrival, but
really, I thought Ian, didn't you?
I really liked Arrival.
Yeah, I
did too. I'm just saying that that I know a ton of people who didn't.
Weird.
That's because people have no attention span
in the deep south.
Which is funny because we're talking about how this film was like long and unnecessary.
It went too far the other way.
So let's talk real quick about Susan Beer's filmography.
Okay. What's her filmography? I haven't looked her up at all yet.
She looks like, if you click on her picture on Wikipedia, she looks like she could have starred as Sandra Bullock.
As Mallory in Bird Box.
There is not... I don't think that there's anything on this that I recognize.
Yeah.
She's... Yeah. Okay, she's...
Looks like she's did a lot of German stuff.
She's Danish.
Okay.
So a lot of this stuff is foreign films. The only thing that I even remotely recognize is that she directed The Night Manager, which is a British like miniseries with Tom Hiddleston and Hugh Laurie and stuff. And I've heard it's like pretty good. But like that's literally the only thing on here that I recognize.
Huh. Yeah. Wow.
So... But the here, but like it makes sense. It really does make sense. Like given that, like I felt that this was incredibly like naive in its direction, like in its direction, in the screenplay, and and just because it came from a book doesn't mean that the book was any good.
No, it sounds like the book was terrible.
Even if the book was good, like you know, like in a book you have so much more time to thread like multiple different concepts together. But like in a movie. In a 2-hour film, or which really should have been less than 2 hours, you have to pick one, maybe two, and like make it work and make it concise and make it clear. Like this should not have been three disparate movies in one jammed together, like incompetently.
It just felt like a lot of the characters were caricatures. Like you threw in guy who's writing his book, you got
exactly.
Security girl, you got guy from
the... It felt like somebody who had watched a bunch of horror movies and knew how to... That was another thing, too, is like this one, like people told me it's supposed to be a thriller. Like it's supposed to be like, you know, really frightening.
I guess, like, but...
It was not scary at all.
No, like, it wasn't scary. It was just... Like at a certain... So I think... Like if I were to compare this to a movie that actually did scare me, The Grudge... Like, The Grudge had a bunch of moments in it where I didn't know what was happening, and that added to the fear, because I didn't know why... I didn't know how The Grudge was, the Grudge spirit thing was working. It just sort of, like, did stuff, and it was scary. I felt like the confusion I had for this was so much more... Like, it went over the top with unanswered questions, that it actually made it less scary, because I have been officially pulled out of the movie now, and I'm just like, I don't understand why this is happening. Like, I don't understand any of this stuff. Like, why isn't anyone else asking these questions? Why isn't anyone
constantly suspending your disbelief?
Yeah, and like, at a certain point, I was suspended too much, and I no longer was like
it kept thrilled. Pulling you out of it, right? Yep. Like it did, like it doesn't, and it still doesn't make any sense. Like the part where the girl's Sandra Bullock's friend thought that she saw her mom, but then like this crazy dude is drawing pictures of monsters.
Yeah.
And then somebody else is saying, oh, they look really sad when they kill themselves. Like, I'm sorry, I'm getting like three different things here. Like, it doesn't make any sense.
Well, the novel writer dude said that it would like manifest uniquely for each person as like something that they detest or hate or are afraid of or something.
But yeah, that doesn't.
But why do you kill yourself? It doesn't
make sense.
Yeah, it doesn't.
Because if you're gonna universally, like, if you're gonna say, "Oh, it manifests differently for each person," but yet they all receive a universal outcome of suicide unless they're crazy, which is lumping all crazy people together under the same umbrella. Like, it basically boiled down.
That connotation has a very messy. That is a very messy connotation. Super
fucking messy.
Yeah, to say that we're crazy. That's
another thing I read in the book description. And it doesn't clear it up totally, but it at least makes a little bit more sense in that. Like, it is crazy people who see it but aren't affected by it. And it specifically says, like, people who are, like, mentally insane. And if you kind of connect the dots there, it kind of makes sense. Because, like, if it's somebody who has, like, mental disorders, hallucinations and stuff, they would see something bad and not be affected by it, essentially. And so,
but it's still like lumping all forms of correct. Like severe mental illness into the same pot. Like, is it people who are, which I mean, this again, it feels very naive. Like, it feels people like it feels like something that someone would have written in high school,
right? Crossing the Bird Box account.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, and I was thinking about that a little. It feels like something I would have written in high school. Oh, like, it really does. And that is not a compliment by any stretch of the imagination.
I feel like you would have done a better job.
I mean, you would have taken at least 15 pages to describe
the movie.
Insulting. This is an insulting film. It's insulting to Netflix and it's insulting to the audience.
It's insulting to people who have actual mental disabilities that are all different in that sense. Like, they're not all, like, this isn't...
It just, if you take any moment and think about, like, it, if you poke any effort into it, it doesn't make any sense. And then, like, it's just, you know, to anybody who enjoyed this film, I recommend you go see A Quiet Place, because it is an infinitely better version
of this film. I recommend you see The Road. I recommend you play The Last of Us.
The Road was also great. I love The Road. I loved A Quiet Place. Both The Road was very disturbing and made you sad. A Quiet Place was very frightening.
Yep. Jeez.
Anyway, that's all I can talk about because I have Academy in the morning and I have to leave.
Wait, Ian, before you don't want to talk about the Crunchyroll Awards?
I do.
Nani?
I do. But what do you know when the awards are?
So they are coming up, I think, at the end of the month. They're selected.
End of January?
Yeah, I think. Oh, man. I have the link up. Oh, no, February 16th. Sorry, that's what it is.
Okay, how about this, Richard? How about we do another anime episode before the anime awards?
Oh, boy.
And we can make our own predictions and talk about them, and it'll give me more time to finish the series that are being nominated.
Okay, I'm good with this. Yeah, let's do that.
Patrick, if you want to join in, you absolutely can, but I don't think that you're going to actually watch any of these.
You need to watch at least one of the... Well, he has watched Violet Evergarden, which is nominated for Best of the Year, so...
I didn't like it.
Well, then he should watch, I don't know, Megalobox.
Oh, man, I really want to watch Megalobox.
It's so good. Okay, well, we're saving this for later.
Okay. Yeah. So anyway, that's it for me.
All right, cool deal. That's it for us. How's that sound? Unless, Patrick, you got anything else you want to say about Bird Box?
Nope.
All right.
It sucked.
It did not involve the Bird Box that often. So.
Oh, my God, Patrick.
3 out of 5 would need more Bird Boxes. So, anyway, guys, thank you all for coming. Susan, thank you for joining us. I don't know
thank
if she's...
Thank
you. Yeah,
we love you, Susan.
We love you, Susan.
Our podcast more.
Yeah. Ian... Good luck at the Academy tomorrow. Patrick.
Thank you.
Good luck with flying. From all of us here, have a good night. Thank you for listening to League of Mediocre Gentlemen, and stay at least mediocre level.